Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Thursday, March 30th, 2023, and we have four cases on our calendar today, three of which are scheduled for oral argument. As noted, I am Judge Wheelock, presiding today on a panel with Chief Judge Susan Siegel and Judge Kevin Ross. And this morning, we are holding our hearings in Courtroom 100 at the Minnesota Judicial Center. Our oral arguments are recorded by the court, and the audio of those recordings is generally available within 24 hours on our website. So with that, Marshall, would you please call our first case?
Now calling
Counsel, as you probably know, you will each have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a timer. If you're using the center podium, you'll be able to see the timer there. You do have the option, if you feel better about it, to use either of the side podiums. And the podium does have an adjustment, so you can raise it up so it's at your height for the microphone. So feel free to do that. There's a lever on the front side of the podium.
On the front?
No, right in the middle.
On your front, right next to you.
Getting warmer?
There's an up and down button.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I will ask each of you to please introduce yourself before you begin. Pronounce your name, and please pronounce the name of your client as you'd like us to refer to them today. And counsel for appellant, there are 15 minutes on the clock. You may begin when you are ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Larry Reed, and I'm the attorney for Dr. Clarence Hightower, who is the appellant in this case. As the court is aware, this is a case involving a written employment contract. It's unusual, at least my research doesn't show a whole lot of, if any, written employment contracts. And this one involves the issue of paid time off owed to my client. When I was doing the research in this case, I came across an expression stated by the court in Hall v. City of Plainview. In that statement, the court said, indeed, it is nearly unimaginable that the issue presented in this case, a dispute over a contract that both sets forth the terms of compensation in the form of accrued PTO that an employee will receive upon performing work, that also provides those terms do not create a contract, that such a contract would ever arise in the context of a negotiated written employment contract, because that scenario makes no sense. But that is what we have here. We have a written employment contract which, despite the plain wording, the district court granted summary judgment in favor of the respondent instead of the plaintiff, appellant. And so we are asking that this court reverse that court. We cited three bases for relief: the contract itself, Chapter 181, and unjust enrichment. In particular, the contract in this case has a Section 5 which governs paid time off. In that paid time off provision, it starts out, it says, employees shall be entitled to paid time off each year in accord with the terms and provisions contained within the employer's paid time off policy. The employer's paid time off policy is written and states that where there is unused accrued PTO hours will be cashed out at the time of permanent separation. That's at page 26 of the manual, which was included in the submissions in the district court.
There is a limit on that, and I thought in your brief, Mr. Reed, that you said that the employee handbook does not apply to your client because you're just arguing on the employment contract. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Not really. I was inarticulate, I guess, in expressing myself on that one. Certain provisions in the employment contract, employee handbook, do not apply. The only provision applicable in this case is the a provision as it relates to paid time off. The employee handbook generally does not cover him, but there's a specific reference in this contract to the paid time off provisions, and that governs him. For example, regular employees have a 400-hour maximum on how much they can cash in. Dr. Hightower had no limitation, and he could accumulate and carry over the paid time off from year to year.
So both the the employment contract required 30 days written notice, and the employee handbook requires 2 weeks written notice as a condition of cashing out. And what that wasn't met here. So what's your argument? How do you get around those provisions?
First of all, as it relates to the notice requirement, the employer waived the notice requirement. That's one thing the judge at the district court did correctly decide. And two,
waive the notice requirement and say, and so we're going to cash out all of your accrued PTO.
Say that again.
It didn't go so far as to say we're going to cash out, that we're waiving it, and so you're therefore entitled to PTO. That's reading something into that letter or email. I can't remember which it was.
They certainly didn't pay it, because that's why we're here. What I guess I would direct your attention to is the page 29 of the brief, where I exactly quote what the provision says. It doesn't place any conditions on the payment of the PTO. It says unused accrued PTO hours will be cashed out at the time of permanent separation. There was no requirement that Dr. Hightower give 2 week notice. And let's assume he was required to give a notice.
And so that what you're quoting is in the employee handbook now, or not the employment contract, right?
The employment contract says that the PTO is governed by the provisions of the employee policy, which is in the employee handbook.
Okay.
All right. And that provision provides that paid PTO will be paid, all PTO will be paid at the time of separation.
Well, okay. So I've got another question for you. If we don't accept, if we go along with the district court on the language of the employment contract itself, are there other grounds on which your client is entitled to pay out of his accrued PTO?
Well, yes, there are, and that would be under Chapter 181 and under unjust enrichment. But
other issues, because I think that Chapter 181 just says if you're entitled to it, then it has to be paid out within so many days or there's a penalty. It doesn't, my reading of it is that I tend to agree with we haven't decided yet, obviously, but it seems like a reasonable reading. So are there other grounds or issues or other things you can point to help us out here? Because it does seem to me that the guy was promised, the right to accrue PTO without this 400-hour accumulation cap. I'm assuming that's part of the consideration of why he continued employment there, and then he's not getting it. But so I'm sympathetic to the argument. I'm just trying to figure out a way to if there's a path based on this record.
Well, there's a path based on a record just based on the reading of the two provisions that the district court relied upon in deciding that he should not get PTO. There's nothing in that provision that says that the employee can only get PTO if the employer terminates the agreement. The district court disregarded the language in the Section 8 of the contract, which said that the employee can terminate the same way that the employer can. So she used the termination without cause provision to determine PTO under Section 5, when Section 8 simply tells you what happens once the agreement is terminated. If the employer can terminate the agreement, so can the employee, and the remaining provisions in Section 8 are equally applicable to each of them. And so the district court decided that because it simply disregarded the language. I mean, the court disregarded the language that said that the employee can terminate the contract in the same way as the employer. And so the termination without cause provision simply tells you what happens once it's done. And then if you look back at Section 5, I mean, Dr. Hightower had been getting this PTO for 12 years. Throughout the course of the 12 years, he would cash it in whenever he chose to, or he would take vacation whenever it was appropriate. And so there was nothing that restricted his right to cash in the PTO. In a reading of the...
I'm sorry for interrupting. So on that issue that he had this practice of cashing out his PTO time previously, the district court disregarded that, saying, wait a minute, we've got an employment contract here and the peril evidence rule applies. So what is your response to that? Why did the district court err?
My response is that it's the interpretation of the contract and the application of the provisions in the contract. If you look at the first line, which says that it's covered by the policy says that you get to pay PTO, and he gets to cash it in. The provisions in Section 5 don't say when you cash it in or how you can do that, but the provisions in the employee manual, which was incorporated into the contract in Section 5, demonstrate how it's done. And on page 29 of my brief, that human resource director indicates that that's how the contract was applied. In other words, Dr. Hightower could cash it in whenever he wanted to, and if he didn't want to, he didn't have to, but he could get paid at any point in time. And that's consistent with a reading of the contract, which includes Section 5 incorporating the manual. With respect to Section 8, again, he is entitled to enforce that just like the employer. I mean, you can't turn to... There's nothing in Section 8 of the contract that says that he can only get paid only if the employer terminates. Otherwise, the provisions that said he can terminate in the same fashion doesn't even make sense.
So actually, I do have a question about that. When I read Section 8 and I read the words, employee may also terminate this agreement in the same fashion upon 30 days written notice sent by certified or registered mail to the board chair, I think it's clear that in the same fashion applies to the manner in which termination notice must be given. It's not clear to me that in the same fashion refers to everything else, and that's partly because as we begin the next sentence, it limits the situation of payout of accrued time off to the situation when the termination occurs by act of the employer, right? We have the language in the next sentence, in the event of termination of this contract by employer, comma, employee shall be entitled to cash out. But I don't see a similar provision that says if employee were to terminate the contract, cash out will happen. So explain to me how, where that interpretation is incorrect and how it should be interpreted.
Well, because it says that employee may terminate the agreement in the same fashion. And you're accepting the representation of, that's the argument that was made by the respondent in the district court, which the court accepted, which I believe is incorrect. I mean, it tells you, in this paragraph here, Section 5, what happens in the event of a termination? I mean, and if it's terminated, either party can terminate it, and he can get paid. It doesn't say that he is not entitled to get paid on his PTO. And then if you still look back at Section 5, which indicates that he is covered by the policy, we've got an express provision that says that when he's terminated or when he leaves, he gets paid. So I'm asking you to look at the language that's, again, it says on page 29, unused accrued PTO hours will be cashed out at the time of permanent separation. This was also an admission by the respondents in their answer at paragraph 40. They admitted that the policy required payment of PTO at the time of separation. So in order to do what the district court did, you'd have to just simply disregard the language, which she did, and I'm asking you not to do that, disregarding the language which says an employee may terminate in the same fashion. And I recognize that what you just stated, but I would submit that that's a narrow interpretation of the agreement. I would also note that, you know, if there was an issue in this case as to whether or not the contract was indeed terminated at the time of the notice. And so when the confusion arose, Dr. Hightower submitted a notice to the employer that he would just simply take his paid time off. So they can't have it both ways. They can't say, we won't pay you, but then
But that wasn't in his email to the board chair, was it? That I'm actually going to leave. What he had, like, I don't know how many weeks. I'll wait until rebuttal to ask. But one thing I am curious about, and it doesn't seem like there's any issue in this, is that he had a 400-hour cap until carrying over time until January 1, 2019. But less than a year and a half later, he has 1,345 hours of PTO accrued. It doesn't seem like there's an issue that's ever been raised over that, but I do find that it's hard for me to understand.
The practice had been that they allowed him to carry it over. They simply
Despite the contract saying there was a 400-hour cap?
They did, and they memorialized that practice with the amendment.
I see. Okay.
Removing the cap.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And next we will hear from counsel for respondent. Please feel free to adjust the podium and also...
Not as tall as Mr. Reed, so...
And also please remember to state your name and your client's name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Kevin Mosier. I am a respondent on behalf of Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties. I may refer to them as CAPRW for short during my 15 minutes. Thank you. The district court got this one right. This is a pretty clear contract, bilateral contract between two sophisticated parties. We have Dr. Hightower on one side and we have CAPRW. He was the executive director, making a sizable income, leading one of the largest, one of the larger and more prominent nonprofits in the state of Minnesota. He had led it for quite a long time, since 2008. There were a series of contracts and agreements between the parties. In 2012, the agreement that we're talking about really here today, it was ultimately amended multiple times, the most recent one before he eventually quit in 2019. Under that agreement, yes, Section 5, as appellant has been, has been arguing, Section 5 sets out the terms for his accrual of paid time off. Very common also in employee handbooks. We're not talking about an employee handbook. We're talking about an agreement between two parties here. But Section 5 sets out the accrual method. It has nothing to do with what happens when the employee leaves. Section 5 is irrelevant for a breach of contract claim, which is what was brought by appellant at the district court level, a breach of contract, a Section 181 claim, and an unjust enrichment claim, an equitable claim. So Section 5 really has no application here today. Section 8 has one sentence, as the court discussing with Mr. Reed has one sentence that sets the condition for the condition precedent for Dr. Hightower to be paid his accrued and unused balance of PTO upon the separation of his employment. And that is only, as the language says, it's very clear, that is only in the event that the employer terminates his employment. That's exactly what What it exactly says is, in the event of termination of this contract by employer, employee shall be entitled to cash out accrued paid time off through the date of termination. There is no comparable provision in this contract that says that Dr. Hightower gets PTO in the event that he quits.
Can you address the appellant's argument with as to the clause in the same fashion?
And as the court was asking him earlier, in the same fashion is the process by which the parties were going to notify one another in the event that they were going to end the relationship. So in the same fashion really just looks at, and I'll look at the exact language. The exact language is that employer may terminate this agreement for any reason upon giving employee 30 days written notice by certified or registered mail. That's a process, right? So that's the method by which we're going to notify Dr. Hightower in the event that CAPRW chose to terminate his employment. The second sentence, notwithstanding paragraph 2, employee may also terminate this agreement in the same fashion upon 30 days written notice sent by certified or registered mail to the board chair. It directs Dr. Hightower on how he is to terminate this contract. That's all it says. It has no application to what happens with his PTO. It is just a notice provision.
So can I ask a question? So why can't this contract be supplemented by provisions of the employee handbook or pattern and practice? Because the evidence from Mr. Hightower is that he, in fact, did cash out PTO, and I don't think there are any provisions in the employment contract itself providing for that. So why can't we supplement the employee handbook or pattern and practice with this contract?
Your Honor, as I argue in our briefing, and as I argued to the district court, we have a merger clause here that specifically says that the entirety of this agreement is bound to itself.
So to its terms, correct? I mean, in an employment relationship, there's a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. You know, what days you have to show up, what holidays there are. I mean, that are governed by things beyond the four corners of an employment contract.
I agree with Your Honor on that, but on this issue of paid time off, that is wholly determined by the agreement that the parties had. There was a practice where he could use it, and there is some reference to you can use the PTO in accord with our normal PTO policies, but it specifically says in Section 5 how he is to, like, there, again, there's a condition precedent here. He needs to notify the board chair in the event that he is going to take PTO. It is not just an absolute right, even while he's employed. Now, in this situation, he's not employed.
But that's to use it, but apparently he cashed it out during the years that he was there.
He cashed out.
And so where is the authority for that? What do we look at?
Your Honor, while he was an employee, there was testimony that he gave at his deposition that when he exceeded the 400, because there was this 400 cap that it was done away with in the 2019 amendment. Prior to the 2019 amendment, there was a 400-hour cap. And so when he would get up to that cap, he was accruing a lot of PTO. He was the executive director. When he would get up to that cap, sometimes he would then cash out the difference above the 400 hours while he was an employee. He was the executive director. He kind of had the ability to make this rule, right? And he was allowed to do it, I guess. Whether the board knew it or not wasn't in the record.
So but, not everything with PTO is within the four corners of the employment contract then?
This issue on his accrual, the amount that he's using, and on the issue of payment upon termination of employment, that is absolutely within the four corners of the contract. We are not here to talk about a situation where Dr. Hightower, as a current employee, asked to cash out his entirety of his PTO. That's not the situation here. What happened here is he voluntarily quit. He didn't give 2 weeks' notice. He didn't give 30 days' notice as required by the contract. He just quit. And then now is asking and saying, oh, I had this practice of cashing out while I was an employee, and not cashing out the entirety, just cashing out everything above 400 hours.
But that's, isn't that what we're talking about here, amounts over 400 hours? Isn't that what is in dispute?
Your Honor, no. He is asking for the entirety of his PTO balance that he left with CAPRW.
Right, and the resistance is for the amounts over 400.
No, Your Honor, CAPRW refused to pay him all of his PTO per the terms of the contract, saying that he was only entitled to it. He has taken, this is the first I have heard from appellant that the PTO policy that the handbook, I'm sorry, not the PTO policy, the handbook, that the handbook applies to him. At his deposition, at summary judgment, and even in briefing to this court, appellant has always said that the handbook provisions do not apply to him. This is the first that I've heard that there is now some discussion that the handbook provisions have any application. That is not his testimony in his deposition. That is not the briefing at the district court for summary judgment. And that wasn't even the briefing here today. It's now a new argument that he's making now in 2023.
So you're saying, just to be clear, this Section 5 reference to established paid time off policy, you're saying that this is the first time that the appellant is incorporating that part of that policy part into his claimed rights?
Throughout this case, appellant, and including in the briefing, I could get the page for you where appellant even says the employee handbook has no application.
Even as to that provision?
He says he's never made that argument, Your Honor, that provision has any, that we should be looking at the employment handbook or the PTO policy in the employee handbook, that we should be looking at it here today to understand his entitlement to a cash out upon termination of his employment. This is the first I've heard this argument. And like I say, his briefing specifically says that.
But Section 5 seems to incorporate it. Regardless of whether he's acknowledged it.
Section 5 incorporates the concept of that policy and refers to that policy and how it might be used. And so when I look at Section 5 and it talks about it and it specifically says that, you know, I'm looking for the exact language. So days, paid time off in addition to the regular entitlement under the employer's established paid time off policy, that doesn't say that he gets all of the benefits and the terms. His accrual is very different. He's getting much more paid time off than normal employees. So there's a reference there, but to me that's just a reference to say when you take time off, it's going to count as like 8.0 on, you know, the way that they process paid time off at the payroll level. It doesn't say to me that you're going to get, and I don't see anything in here that says you're going to get all of the benefits under the policy. This was a separately negotiated thing. Dr. Hightower specifically negotiated this to have better terms than the other employees.
He's entitled to paid time off each year in accord with the terms and provisions contained within the employer's established paid time off policy. That seems like broad language.
It's language that just looks to the way that they would process the accrual at the, you know, payroll, at the payroll level. But again, that language,
the qualification you just made is not language in the section, though.
And I'll grant you that there's a reference to the policy,
It seems like more than just a reference.
So the argument's never been made that he would get the PTO and the policy on top of this PTO, I mean, this was why he was specifically negotiating it. But even so, we don't have, he is no longer an employee. So the only way, and we look at, you know, just to pivot a little bit, we look at the Supreme Court's decisions in Lee versus Fresenius, and I'm totally probably mispronouncing that, but in the Lee versus Fresenius case and the Hall v. City of Plainview case, and we look at where the courts say that this is a matter of contract between the parties. And in those cases, those were employee handbook cases, where even so, the court said that the employees don't have, that if they don't meet the conditions set forth in the employee handbook, which they equate to a contract, that the court, that the employees don't have entitlement. Here, upon termination of employment, it doesn't say that he can't use the PTO. If Dr. Hightower wanted to continue to work at CAPRW, he would have had a lot of PTO that he would have been able to use. And I have no dispute on that, but in this situation,
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish your thought.
In this situation, it's a termination issue, and we look at the Lee cases to understand, is there a contractual entitlement to paid time off in the event that somebody quits and in this situation leaves a balance? And in those cases, the courts looked at the handbooks, they looked at the contracts between the employer and the employee, and they said the employee didn't meet the conditions,
so
just like here.
Am I understanding you to acknowledge that if the decision to terminate would have been made not by Dr. Hightower, but by the employer, then he would be entitled to the damages he's seeking?
Yes, per Section 8. If he had, if CAPRW had terminated his
without restriction, not without the 400-hour restriction,
he would have gotten the entire balance. He would have gotten the entire balance. He didn't meet that condition precedent. And so, again, this is a breach of contract claim, right? So we have formation. I don't think that's in dispute. And then we have conditions and whether or not Dr. Hightower performed the conditions. And in this situation, he did not. The condition is set forth in Section 8 that the only way that he gets the payout of his PTO is in the event that CAPRW had terminated his employment. There's no dispute. That did not happen. He voluntarily quit and started another job within days.
April 1, right? But so I have a question for you. There is this communication saying that we're not holding you to the notice. So was it waived? And if not, why not?
So, Your Honor, we brought a breach of contract claim at the district court level, and the court found that in that April 6th letter, 2020 letter that you're referencing, that we waived it. But the waiver has nothing. It doesn't mean that we waived his quitting. It's not like
the 30-day notice. But why not? I mean, why not?
Your Honor, he could have given 300 days notice, and he still would not be entitled under Section 8 to any payout of PTO.
I thought you just said the opposite in response to Judge Ross's question. I'm confused.
If CAPRW fired him, he would have gotten his PTO.
Oh, okay.
Under no circumstances
right.
did
not,
that.
That wasn't a concession, that it was just if he'd given the proper notice. Is that if...
Correct.
If they had without. Okay, I'm sorry.
Totally, yes. Yeah, I want to be very clear.
No.
If he had given proper notice or improper notice, as is the case here, he would not get
all
his
right.
PTO.
Okay.
Per Section 8.
Thanks for clarifying that. And I apologize
for
my mishearing.
Thank you very much. And we will have 5 minutes on the clock and turn to appellant's counsel for the last word.
First, Judge, you would ask a question with respect to the incorporation of the policy, and I would submit that that's exactly what paragraph 5 does. That's what the parties look to, and as indicated on page in the brief, this is how it was applied. In other words, there were certain provisions in the policy that were not applicable to him, which would be the cap, for example, but he was also entitled to the provision in that policy that said that he could cash in at the time of separation. And that was argued to the district court at page 10 of the summary judgment memorandum, and it was noted in the answer in the answer that the appellant respondent gave quoted the policy, which I just read to you before. Unused PTO hours will be cashed out at the time of permanent separation.
So can I ask you a question? Your argument is that the district court misread the employment contract, correct?
Correct. You didn't apply all of the terms.
Okay. But you're not claiming, I mean, there were cross motions for summary judgment.
Correct.
Right? And so you're not claiming there are any issues of fact that should go to trial. Oh, okay. All right.
And that's what I was saying at the end of my argument. And that is that the judge decided, as she read the facts, that the contract was terminated with the email to the chairperson of the board. So there was some arguments and disputes back and forth with respect to that. So in response to that, rather than ask for the full amount of his PTO, Dr. Hightower said, okay, fine. If you guys have an issue with respect to timing, et cetera, then what I will do now is I will exercise my right to take the PTO. In other words, I will, from now on, as of a certain date,
But there's no fact issue there. That's just a question of whether, after submitting something called a letter of resignation, that he could take back his resignation, right? I mean, that's not really a fact issue. That's how do we characterize that?
No,
is
because
he allowed, okay.
That's not. They said that the letter was insufficient. The letter was unacceptable to terminate the contract because he did not comply with the notice. And so his response was to say, okay, if I haven't replied with the notice, then I'll take the PTO off. You don't have to pay me a lump sum. I'll just take the time off, which he could do. And so that's a fact issue because the judge decided that the contract was terminated with one of those communications. And so there's that's a fact question that precluded summary judgment.
In other words, even if the district court was correct in interpreting the by the employer language, meaning that your client is entitled to payment only if the employer terminates, your position is there's a fact question as to whether or not your client should be entitled to actually use the PTO and then be paid compensation in a regular course?
Correct. And that's what the argument was in the district court, which was not addressed because the court determined that even though the parties had sent cross communication with respect to the termination of the contract, the court ruled that it had occurred on a certain date with the board chair.
So the fact dispute is then as to when the termination occurred.
Right. Also, with respect to past cashing in, my recollection is different from counsel. My client did not cash out once he got near the cap. He cashed out whenever he chose to cash out. The policy as applied did not require that he, as I said, there was a practice that allowed him to carry over even above the 400 hours, and it was eventually memorialized in the written contract. I've put all the arguments in the brief, and I'd ask the court to enter judgment for Dr. Hightower.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both of you for the excellent briefing and argument here today. The case is submitted, and an opinion will be issued within the statutory time frame. Thank you.